Welcome in to the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, and it's Fan Friday once again, part two on a weekend. Alex, what are we getting into in this one?
There's a lot of great things. First off, our buddy Larry the Athlete gives us the top 10 Frank moments, in his opinion, since Frank has been on the Knicks. Sort of like nod to the fact that he might not be with the team past this season. So to sort of enjoy him while he's here, goes through the top 10 moments of Frank's Knicks career. Then we took some questions, one about offensive wrinkles that we would like to see the Knicks add in the playoffs to try to, you know, diversify their offense a bit. I think we came up with a few good solutions there. And then just in general, talked about sort of the shifting perception of being a Knicks fan, you know, of how we perceive the team, how to switch from pessimistic sort of by nature to more optimistic, and sort of big picture, deeper stuff like that. So a lot of great stuff in this episode. I won't hold this up any longer. We'll be right into it next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up, up left. Now fires it.
And he's good. And he's fouled.
Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join Alex and I next week, Thursday at 5:30, to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Again, I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster once again, now that COVID, at least in the New York area, is trending downwards. He is Alex Wolf, the editor-in-chief of The Strickland, the greatest Knicks website in the whole wide world. And without further ado, we are back with our fans, with our Knicks fans, I should say. Maybe they like the podcast too, to talk Knicks playoff basketball. So without further ado, let's get into it on Locker Room right now.
All right, next speaker request. We got Larry the Athlete. Wants to come up.
What's Alex, up, Larry? Alex, did you know I was on Larry's podcast this weekend?
I did hear about that, yes. I still have to listen to it, but I did see that you were on.
It was a great experience. I learned about korfball. How's it going, Larry?
It's going very well. Thank you, guys. Yeah, we did a kind of best of underdog sports and korfball, fistball. I got a message from someone on Instagram about fistball, just saying that we're totally wrong and saying that it's like volleyball, that it's a totally different game. But we'll see. I'll have that argument with him on the show, maybe.
So, wait. Would you say that guy tried to tell you that Larry doesn't know sports?
Yeah, I think the nerve. But he was friendly. It's apparently his username on Instagram was like Australian Fistball Group or something like that. And he was like, if you ever want us on the show to really tell you what it's all about, and I'm going to take him up on it.
That sounds fascinating. That's, of course, your pod is called Larry Knows Sports.
Right. So yeah.
If anybody wants to check out the initial foray into fistball, I guess they can check out that pod with Gavin, right?
We talk a little bit about, I think in the previous episode, we focus a little bit more on fistball.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, the recent episode, we get a little bit of Gavin's college history and training and broadcasting.
Oh, nice. That's fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Larry. I felt weird. I'm so used to interviewing other people. I felt weird talking about myself, but it was also great. It's a great ego trip. So I appreciate you helping me in that endeavor.
No problem.
But what's on your mind today, Larry?
Yeah. So on my mind, I was very happy to see Frank get at least one more great game as a Knick. I was worried that because Tibbs, I don't know, just doesn't really seem to trust him, especially in that Clipper game, not playing him in the second half, that I keep wondering if this is the last we've seen of him And because we don't know, and I really hope he's here next season and plays more this season, you know, anybody who's lost somebody knows that you wish you told them you loved them while they were still around. And I want to do that for Frank while he's still a Nick. And if you guys are okay with it, I've compiled a top 10 moments of Frank's Knicks tenure.
Oh, yeah, go for it, man. Fire him off.
All right. So honorable mention is draft night when we first got introduced to him and his dapper red suit. Honorable mention number two is November 14th, 2019. This was the block on Kristaps that was called a foul but wasn't really a foul.
That was a great moment. I love that.
It wasn't great. Yeah.
Incredible.
All right, so number 10, the mean mugging after the Vooch dunk.
Okay. Oh, that's who it was. Yeah, we were referencing it in a recent episode. I couldn't remember who he dunked on, but yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I mean, I rewatched it. It's like not exactly a dunk, but he did go up against him and go to the rim, and it was pretty great.
He went up for the dunk, and ultimately it went in. So we're just gonna call it. That's fine.
Yeah,
an honorable dunk.
Honorable dunk. Number nine is on December 21st, 2017, his rookie year, when he just put the clamps on Kyrie and the Knicks won against Boston and we're still kind of cooking this year. And it was really, I think, our first glimpse at what he could do defensively.
I remember that one distinctly. Yep. That was a great game.
I was going to say, reliving this, Larry, I'm not ready to lose him. I don't want him to go.
I don't either.
There are so many times that we were meant to have that we haven't had yet.
Yeah. And watching all these clips, I relive them too. And you see that he does have, like, there are moments where he shows, like, real offensive guard skills. And I don't know. I think if you were given the opportunity, as we all do, that we could see more. Number eight. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is all just going to end with us like bawling our eyes out like this, the end of Dawson's Creek or something.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping. Number eight, this is October 26th, 2019. Came at someone else's expense, but this was last year. Fizz was still the coach, not playing Frank. He was playing DSJ. DSJ was terrible. They go to a timeout. And even though he seems like he had the ips, this was in the second half. DSJ, they send him out again when he's just like, his head's not in it. And he still continues to miss shots, air ball shots. And the crowd starts chanting, "We want Frank." Sucks for DSJ. But in the moment, that really encapsulated what I was thinking in that moment. And just, I think, the frustration that Frank fans have.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, but it really is like, I wish they had, I know as a society we have more pressing issues right now, but there should have been group counseling available to Knicks fans who are just like tied up in straitjackets and being like, I don't get it. He's one of the best defenders in the whole league. Why are we playing DSJ over him? DSJ sucks. DSJ can't even play offense. What's the point?
I know. I don't know. I don't think I've ever been so emotionally tied to a player where, like, when he's on the court, my eyes are glued to him and I'm just like hoping it goes right as though it were my own kid.
I was going to say, I'm really happy. Alex and I feel sympathy for people who didn't have like a podcast or a good friend as an outlet to talk about it, because if I kept it all bottled up, I would have gone crazy. But yeah, sorry, Larry, keep it rolling.
Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. You know, the main reason that you want to work on your car at home is usually to save money. And I feel like most of these brick and mortar auto parts stores that you go to don't quite get that. Seems like they charge you an arm and a leg for any given part. They charge you more than what they would charge a mechanic if a mechanic would come in and want to buy a part. And that just doesn't seem right. Like, for example, let's say you got the family minivan, your 05 to 2010 Honda Odyssey, and it's got a fuel pump issue. Well, you could get a fuel pump assembly for that Honda Odyssey for $353.99 at Advance Auto Parts. and just $216.79 at rockauto.com. That is not insignificant. That's like a $150 difference. That's enough for, I don't know, a huge fancy dinner for your family of five afterwards. That is just so much money that you could be saving with rockauto.com versus one of those big box stores. On top of which, you get to do it all at your own convenience from your couch. You get it delivered right to your door, and you don't have to deal with any pushy salespeople or any salespeople that are trying to push you towards a more expensive part just so they can make more money on their commission checks. RockAuto.com doesn't care about that. They just want you to get the parts you need and be happy with it and get it for a low price. So definitely the place to go if you're looking to do some repairs on your car. If you want to see what's available for your car or truck, I had a gas attendant leave my gas cap off. So I just ordered a new gas cap from RockAuto.com. Maybe you want that. Maybe you want something different. Head to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And make sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
All right, number seven. November 8th, 2019, the almost dunk on Kristaps Porzingis. He got fouled by KP, and the Knicks won. They won both games against Dallas this year, in the first year that KP was playing for them. It was a great revenge game, and I watched some highlights from that, and Frank just had an amazing all-around game. He, I think, like 4 steals, 3 blocks, 14 points, off 4 or 5 from 3. It was one of his best games last year.
Yeah.
Number 6, I'm going with the Laker game because it was probably his best game this year. And even though they didn't win, it's in the moment, it just felt so reaffirming to see Frank having a good game finally. And it felt like, it did feel like for most of the game, like we were going to win and then we were going to clinch the playoffs. And it would have been so fulfilling to just have Frank, who in it, you know, who's our most, the most tenured Nick, just lead us to our first playoff berth in 8 years.
Yeah, and those 22 minutes were certainly very enjoyable from him.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's Larry. I was thinking the exact same thing as you in real time. I was ready to open the podcast, even if Julius Randle made a game-winning shot, and be like, no, we got to talk about how Frank is the reason the Knicks are back in the playoffs. And it felt like that was almost the single reason I was, this sounds insane, but like the single reason I was most upset that they lost that game is I was just ready to have that conversation to what you said, Larry. The fact that he's, I mean, obviously the last 20 years on and off have been pretty awful if you're a Knicks fan, but the last 4 in particular were just, it felt like they hit this weird morass where it was just kind of like, all right, this is, I mean, as long as Dolan's alive and the owner, like this is just never going to end. And for him to be the one to guide them through that would have been amazing. But I'm with you. That is a top thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Number 5, March 10th, 2020. This is the 2010 game against the Wizards. Probably his best offensive game ever. And it really felt like at the end of last season, the shortened season, like he was really coming into his own offensively. Mike Miller is probably the only Knicks coach of the 4 he's had that has like really trusted him. And one thing he was doing that I wish he continued was he was starting to drive a lot and get to the line a lot, and he was actually hitting his free throws last year. So that was probably like at the end of the season, really it looked like he was growing, and that was his best offensive game, and it's only a 2010 game.
You always hear some of the offensive numbers on him where, and you're like, oh really, that's, it was like I don't know if you caught it, Larry, but like PD dropped on our podcast that he only has 3 rim attempts all year, and then you're like, oh yeah, he's had like 4 20 point games his career. You're like, what? It feels like he's had like 30. But yeah, sorry, go ahead. Number 4. Yeah. What are we up to? 3, 4?
4 is next. Yeah, I oh man, 3 rim attempts. That's terrible. So number 4
rim attempts than plays we have left. Sorry, go ahead. Or less. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 4, March 2nd, 2020. Leon Rose's first game as the Knicks president of basketball operations. This one is the stop where he just perfectly defended Russell Westbrook at the end of the game for the Knicks' best win of last season.
Yeah, that was a great one as well.
Oh yeah, where Rose missed the pull up. Yeah, all right. What's number three?
Number three, September 11th, 2019, FIBA Frank, where we really first saw what he could do. Great two-man game with Rudy Gobert as they upset Team USA in the quarterfinals.
That was a great moment. It does kind of say something that the third best moment is probably one that he experienced in another uniform.
Yeah.
But his France national team run that year was very enjoyable.
Yeah. And I was debating whether or not that counts, but I put it on there.
I think it does.
I remember we talked about it. It got us excited. I remember, Alex, you watched the game, and I was asking you, like, oh, what happened? What, how did he look? And you were like, man, he's gonna be a different player next year. And we did. It's this weird thing this season where we just haven't gotten to see him on the ball very much, and it feels like this Mandela effect thing where, like, you were like, no, I watched him last season. He learned how to dribble. He learned how to get to the basket. And this year, like, people are like, I don't know, man. I've watched him all season. He doesn't really do that. But it really did happen, and that France game was the start of it. All right, big number two, yeah. Larry, what do we got?
Okay, this is November 5th, 2017. The comeback against the Indiana Pacers. I know it's heresy to talk about Kristaps doing anything good for the Knicks, but in the moment, seeing what was probably Porzingis' best game as a Knick, a great comeback where we really started to see what he could do. Frank was hitting, he hit, I think, two clutch threes in the fourth quarter, got his first bang from Mike Breen, and it looked like, okay, this is our young core, and everything just felt really good to be a Knick fan that day.
I remember that one, too. That feels like eons ago.
Yeah, yeah. And the number one Frank moment, November 13th, 2017, where Frank stands up to LeBron after LeBron said that he wishes the Knicks had Dennis Smith Jr. on their team before Dennis Smith Jr. was actually on their team. And LeBron, I think, he hits a shot and the ball is just rolling around on the floor. Frank goes to pick it up to get it to out of bounds, and LeBron's in front of him. He just gives LeBron a little shove to get out of his way, and he gets a standing ovation. And I think this is what was really the moment where he, like, endeared himself to fans and really cemented that lovable feeling that we all feel for him.
I think I would concur. And that was also, I think, immediately following the comments that LeBron made that was like, DSJ should be a Knick.
Exactly, yeah.
When, like, nobody really gave a crap what LeBron had to say about the Knicks at that point, except for all the people that then put it on ESPN and stuff all day, and we had to listen to it. But yeah, I concur. That was definitely a moment that showed you that he had some stones to go with his very humble and nice personality that he's got.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, what a list, Larry. Thanks for compiling that. I think that's the most effort any person has put into coming up here. So we appreciate it. I'm emotional, but what a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, it's really something to watch this, especially the comeback game against Indiana. Watching those highlights, I really started getting goosebumps.
Man, yeah,
I'm holding out hope. If there are no injuries in the playoffs, maybe it's a stretch that he's in the rotation, but I think Tibbs has caught on to the idea. Like, I mean, we saw it very briefly against the Suns where he seemed to, like, start matching his minutes with Chris Paul, and then he went away from that in the second half and it didn't really work out. But I think he could be someone pulled out in, like, a very specific matchup, like, especially if the Knicks end up playing the Hawks and you have to go against Trae Young that whole time. I think we might see slightly more Frank than we're expecting in the playoffs. And, you know, if he... I'm kind of holding out hope. Like, he just needs to have a moment that makes it impossible for the Knicks not to keep him at a very small price.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, who knows how it's going to go? But I'm not going to accept that he's gone until he's gone. But I see things turning out the same way you do, probably.
Yeah, I'm also not giving up hope yet. I mean, he's a survivor. How many times did we think he was going to get traded?
Yeah, it's a good point. And the fact, I mean, how obviously not in the sense that he's playing a big role on the Knicks, but it's pretty incredible given the value that Derrick Rose has given the Knicks that allegedly maybe they would have broke if the Pistons played hardball, but that the Pistons asked for Frank and the Knicks said no. I mean, gotta give it up to the front office and the fact that they were still able to get that done, and we've seen what Rose has given the Knicks for essentially nothing.
Yeah.
Anyways, Larry, before we send you off, could you tell people where they can find your excellent podcast that only sources the best guests in the world?
Of course. It is called Larry Knows Sports. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, what have you. And I'm at Larry the Athlete on Twitter or Instagram.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much, Larry, as always. That was awesome. That was a nice little nostalgia trip. And you're right. It's good to get it done now before we're, you know, potentially this summer crying our eyes out over Frank. Better do it now while the memory of that great game is still in hand here. So definitely appreciate that. And we got Brent. I always forget. Brent Mashia?
Hello?
Is that how you say your last name? Mashia?
Close enough.
All right. I was almost there. Sorry. I know you've been up a number of times. To me, you're just Brent, though. What's up, Brent? How you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Good. Finally, what's on your mind today, dude? Oh, yeah, I know. I can't get over it still. Still doesn't quite feel real, but it's pretty cool, like, that thought of, all right, well, the Knicks are definitely going to get like 5 days to get healthy before the real playoffs start, which is pretty damn cool this year.
Yeah. And that kind of like has to do with my question. Like, cause I was thinking with the 5 days and you know how crazy Tibbs is. He's always looking at film, and I've heard a lot of talk with the fan base. We're talking about how hopefully in those 5 days, he realizes, you know, the whole Alfred Payton thing, a change up the rotation. But I'm less hopeful for that, but I'm more hopeful for just the idea of him thinking more about more complicated offensive schemes that we can implement in the playoffs. Because the rotation is what the rotation is. I've lost hope at this point. But I'm just thinking, what kind of offensive changes, other than just lineups, do you think he can do to actually make this team more playoff ready?
Man, I think we've seen Benji Ritholtz, if you guys don't already follow him, is a great follow for this stuff specifically. He thinks of that a lot. He tweets about it a lot and points out good examples of plays that will translate to the playoffs. Tom Piccolo as well. But one thing he mentioned when he was on our podcast, and I've seen him tweet about a lot that I kind of agree with, is running more inverted pick and rolls or just flat out more pick and rolls that involve Julius Randle, and specifically putting IQ and Randle in screening actions. And really weaponizing IQ shooting. But frankly, with the way RJ has evolved as a shooter, I would really like to see more RJ Randle pick and roll. And I think the biggest thing is just not letting Randle be static at any point in the game, but particularly at the ends of games, because we've seen this debate break out, like, all right, is Randle going a little bit too far into hero ball? Like, particularly when someone like Anthony Davis is on him in the playoffs, like we're talking about who these teams are going to, who the Knicks are going to potentially play. Like, you're looking at defenders like DeAndre Hunter or Bam Adebayo or Giannis. I mean, obviously the last two are harder than the first one, but the point is Randle's going to be going up against someone in all likelihood just as big, just as strong as him. And he's capable of making shots in those scenarios. We've seen it. I mean, he even had the game against the Heat earlier this year where he's hitting the crazy turnaround over Bam, but it's harder than it needs to be when you can run those plays, and when you have shooters who can also do stuff off the dribble in RJ and IQ, in Rose all of a sudden, who's a 40%+ three-point shooter, you have a lot of different options. And I get the idea, I think, some of the times is that you just don't want to, especially at the end of a game, like with in the final seconds with clock dwindling, you don't want to get a second defender in Randle's vicinity that can force the ball out of his hands. But I think that's the whole point of that is you're trusting the second player in that exchange, and if it's IQ or if it's RJ or if it's Rose, if you're going to double Randle, all right, I don't care how much time is left, that guy is going to make you pay, or I'm going to be okay if the game-winning shot is an IQ open three or an RJ open mid-range shot or a Rose push shot. So I think for Tibbs, it's taking that next step and putting that faith in these guys and just kind of going with the premise, all right, it's not only Julius Randle who can make this shot. The Knicks are fortunate to have a number of different credible options in those situations, but also throughout the game and running those two-man actions and making sure it's not just Julius doing work. Because I think you're going to find that his skill set, and especially with how big and strong he is, I mean, that was the whole thing that epitomized his early career. Him rolling to the basket is going to be an issue for teams, especially when they're so geared to stop and shooting. But Alex, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I got lost in the Julius talk. The initial question was just like, what sort of things should be implemented for the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
I agree that there should be some more diverse looks for Julius. I do think that what you said with the inverted pick and rolls will be nice. I think we've seen that. You know, he's even done those a few times with Derrick Rose. Once Quickly gets back, Quickly's kind of the perfect partner for that. And they have run it once or twice together. I think the big thing, honestly, and it sort of is similar to what you're talking about, is I just would, you know, if I was Tibbs, I'd be like, you know what, we've got most of this stuff pretty well figured out. You know, obviously you're going to have some matchup dependent stuff that you're going to work on for whoever you end up drawing in the first round. But I think the big thing is I would work on late game execution. I think that's the one thing that's really been lacking with the Knicks lately. I mean, we saw it kind of rear its ugly head against the Lakers the other day, and sometimes it works. You know, sometimes the Knicks have had some big shots in key moments. But by and large, it seems like if it comes down – there was the stat during the Laker game the other day of the Knicks, I think the stat had said, were 2-8 in games decided by 3 points or less, and that would have made them now 2-9 in those such games after losing the game to the Lakers the other night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think those are situations where the Knicks struggle, you know, and they need to really work on something more creative than, like, give Julius Randle the ball and let him figure it out. Because as great as Julius has been, I don't think that he, you know, if you get a good defender on him, like Gavin was just saying, like, if you get an Anthony Davis on him, and, you know, there's only one Anthony Davis, and there's only a handful of guys I think they can truly D up Randle to like that degree. But even if you get a somewhat good defender on him, you don't want him to be taking a contested mid-range shot off an ISO as your best possible shot at winning a game. I think that, you know, particularly with like RJ, where you've seen that he's made some pretty clutch shots this season down the stretch of games, big three-pointers, stuff like that. That's a guy that you could definitely trust. Reggie Bullock has made those sort of shots already this year too. He made that three to tie up, I think that was the Memphis game, the first one of the win streak, if I'm not mistaken, where Bullock hit that corner three. That was the Pelicans game. That was the one Pelicans game because Lonzo didn't get out on him. Either way, the kick out to the corner there. But, you know, you've seen the other guys on this team can make key shots. So I think that the Knicks just need to get a little more creative as far as drawing up actual plays in the closing stretch of games, rather than kind of just these let's let Julius figure it out situations. Because as much as I love Julius and as much as I have faith in him to create shots for himself, you know, you're asking him to essentially put the whole game on himself in probably his, you know, 38th to 44th minute of the game, you know, out there in the final possession, creating his own shot first off after probably playing a really tough defensive possession the possession before, and then making that shot. And it's a lot to ask a guy, particularly when you have teammates that, you know, are really good spot-up shooters, and Randle is very good at, particularly in those late-game situations, drawing the defense in and keeping all that attention, you know, on himself because he's such a focal point of the offense. So I would just look for some more creative ways to get around those situations, because I do think that these 1-2, 2.5, whatever, possession games are going to become more common for the Knicks in the playoffs, because they always are. You know, the playoffs are always just more competitive, you know, more blow for blow. These are teams that you know are, you know, similar to you talent-wise and more, you know, that are a good matchup for you, particularly when you're in that range the Knicks are in, where they're going to either be in the 4-5 matchup or the 3-6 matchup. So, yeah, we'll see how it all goes, but that's probably my biggest thing. And it's kind of cool that, honestly, late-game execution is probably one of the only nits I have left to pick with this team, other than maybe that starting rotation. But I think we've already kind of beat that dead horse enough, you know, here.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably where I'd lean towards.
But like what made it even well, not actually strange, but what made it kind of like, because I rewatched the Lakers game and the late game execution, because we're all like, again, like me and everybody else, we were all kind of annoyed about how that last possession went when it came like RJ getting the ball on top of the key with no spacing. But if you look at how we ended OT, that was a great end of play possession. It got Randle going downhill. He had a semi open push shot. It just bounced out. So it's like we actually saw it. If that shot would have went in, that would have been a great late game execution. But it's just they don't do that consistently. And like
we the only problem was before that you had the two possessions. You had the one where Randle traveled, and the other one earlier in the game where he was just basically given the ball and ISO'd against AD and got bottled up until the point that there was a shot clock violation. So it's like you just need to see that more consistently.
Yeah. So like with Tibbs, I'm just wondering, like, I think a part of him, he's still in the mindset of kind of like the Derrick Rose MVP level Chicago teams, where it's like, I have this great individual player. I know I have these plays, but my player is so excellent. I kind of give him some rope to kind of experiment and figure it out. And if it doesn't work the first two times, okay, now I'm going to draw up a play versus that being his first idea. Like, I noticed that he kind of just lets them, he sometimes lets them play around and mess up on their own until he finally calls an angry timeout and like, okay, y'all got to get it together. I've noticed that about him.
Yeah. I've kind of noticed the same thing too. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I do think that he needs to adjust to the fact that, to your point, he doesn't necessarily, I mean, we all love Randle, and I do think he's capable of making some shots, but he's not necessarily the best guy that you want at the very end of the game, giving the ball just to say, just figure it out and make a shot. You know, I do think he needs a little bit of structure still. Because when you give him that much freedom, I do think it plays into some of his worst tendencies, unfortunately. Like what we've seen, you know, like what we saw last year, basically. You know, if he feels like it's all on him, he has a tendency to just kind of tunnel vision it rather than looking for different reads and stuff. So hopefully Tibbs can kind of recognize that and start kind of working with that.
Yeah, that definitely needs to get figured out.
Yeah, Brent, did you have anything else, sir?
I'm trying to think. I don't really think I have anything else. Other than that, I'm really excited for the playoffs. I'm glad we're finally in it. And just, I don't know, man. I just feel like this is a good start to something. Like, other than 2013, I feel like this is actually the beginning of something that's going to be real consistent for a long period to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the beauty of the moment we're in, where, and I don't know, I think, do you guys feel this way, where your PTSD doesn't let you fully appreciate that? Because I know I'm casually throwing around some serious psychological terms, but I mean, just to some extent, I kind of feel like, all right, but when's the other shoe going to drop? Is someone going to tear their ACL? Is the shooting going to go away next year? Are they going to blow the draft picks? Like, it almost still feels a little too good to be true, because if you really let yourself look at it objectively, you're like, you know, this is the worst it's going to be for the next 5 years. Like logically, it seems like things are just going to get better from here. But do you guys allow yourself to feel that way? Or do you feel like a little bit like, I don't know, like, yeah, anything could happen?
I think I do, simply because the fact that I just feel like we need to keep the same energy. We can't keep telling about the team that, oh, the culture with Dolan and everything needs to be changed and the team needs to be better. But as fans, we still have the same pessimistic mindset of the past. Like, I feel like we just need to, I know it's hard, but I think we just need to, you know, it is what it is. Like, if the team is showing improvement, we need to start expecting more from them. And when I also look at the players, I'm looking at it like this. If you're RJ Barrett, you were drafted, the first season was very bad. Your rookie season should be the worst season of your entire career. Everything else is going up. And if you look at Emmanuel quickly, they're going into an organization where stuff has already been figured out. So if we are connecting with these young guys, if they're starting on the right foot, we should start on the right foot as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. In two as yet released things that I did this week, funny enough, I got contacted by someone from a UK newspaper wanting to do an interview about the Knicks. And then I did a fun project with another content creator this week. And the same thing came up twice of like you know, how is this year compared to other years and stuff? And the analogy I used was during the Melo years, it felt like from the second that the Knicks acquired Melo, based off the price that they had to pay to get him and just the nature of the fact that you acquired this star that was right at the cusp of his prime, that you knew was, you know, you were going to get maybe 2 or 3 years of his peak, and then it was going to be, you know, things were going to start to decline from there. And, you know, I think that there was always just this sense that the window started as open when Melo got here, but then it was gradually closing the entire time that he was here. And you were just trying to, like, sneak out that window, you know, and take advantage of it before his prime was up and your time, you know, expired. And they never were able to do that, unfortunately. And then this time around, it feels kind of like, rather than the window being open and closing, it feels like the window is on its way open and hasn't even reached its apex yet, you know? Like, the Knicks window hasn't even truly started yet. So I think it's – I feel like I'm really able to dream right now, you know, in the sense of the – you know, this is literally – this was supposed to be one of the last tank years that the Knicks were going to have before maybe seeing improvement next year or something. And instead, we're now – instead of talking about – oh, are they going to have the 4, 5, or 6 lottery odds? We're talking about, are they going to be the 4, 5, or 6 seed in the playoffs? You know, I think that's such a huge jump that it's totally cool to get optimistic this season because, you know, to your point, Brent, I think our, you know, you got to kind of mirror the energy. Like the Knicks are clearly feeling it. They're clearly, you know, ready to go compete and give some team a really hard time in the playoffs. And, you know, even if they only end up in the 4-5 matchup, and even if they're the 4 seed or something and they lose to, like, the Hawks or the Heat or whoever, that's still a successful season by and large because they got so much further than we ever thought. And I think, honestly, the development curve, instead of being a nice little gradual thing here, has taken, like, a sharp turn upwards this year. And all of a sudden now we're talking about, you know, a team that, oh, is this, could this be a team that's ready to add that difference making star in the next year or two? You know, and they still have a surplus of draft picks. Like, are they going to be able to hit on 2 other picks in the 20s this year? Which they already did once, you know, under this new regime with Quickley. So are they going to have kind of the magic touch with those late first round picks and that 1 early 2nd round pick again and fill out the depth of this team? Start getting to the point where, you know, we're talking about a team that's deep enough and talented enough to potentially really contend. So I'm totally, you know, in the mindset of all of the past, you know, failures of the team and like the disappointment of the 13-14 season after the 12-13 season, giving everybody so much hope again. You know, I think that's all kind of washed away at this point. This team has cleansed me, baptized me in success, and like I'm ready to just keep going with it at this point.
Yeah, like I just think all that stuff matters. And it's like, love him or, well, I guess we don't love him, we all pretty much hate him. But like with the Porzingis thing, the one thing that he had a point of is the fact that if you're in an organization where there's all this backbiting and dysfunction all around, it's going to sour you towards your NBA career going forward. And we saw with Julius Randle, like, the stuff he got from Kobe Bryant stuck with him throughout his entire career. And I like the fact that we're creating a culture where, like, these young guys that we have on our team, like, they're going to be able to look back on this season like, oh, my second year in our career, we beat all the odds. We went against what everybody else thought we could be.
And talk about, like, the lessons that Julius has imparted on them. Like, you've already heard that from guys like RJ and Quickley and whatever, that it's almost like a passing down through the generations thing of, like, yeah. Kobe taught Julius about the go get some work in the second you get into a new city. He passed that down to the whole team, and now the whole team's doing it with him. So, and they're already starting to talk, too, about how much impact Tibbs has had on them, how much Kenny Payne has, Johnny Bryant, all these guys, how much impact they've had on their careers this year, even though it's just like their first, second, third year, whatever. So, yeah, I'm in agreement with you there, too. A lot of it, I mean, that's the culture that everybody talks about. That's always the buzzword in the NBA is culture. And that's, they certainly are well on their way to establishing a winning culture this year.
All right. Thanks for answering my questions, guys.
Yeah, you guys. Brent, thank you. I mean, you guys legitimately made me more optimistic. Very well said by both of you. Alex and everyone, I'm going away for the weekend, and I pushed as long as I can, but I have to get going. I don't know, Alex, are we wrapping up, or are you going to keep it going?
Oh, we don't have any other speaker requests, so I think it's about time to wrap up anyway.
Well timed. Okay.
Brent, before we get going, do you want to plug social media or anything before we send you down?
I don't have no social media to plug. Just plug plug Locked On Knicks. Y'all do a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thanks, Brent.
Thanks for doing my advertisement for me.
No problem. All right, take it easy, guys.
Thanks so much, Brent. All right, later, man.
See you, man.
All right, Gavin. Well, that's it. So this is our locker room for this week. Thanks, everybody, for popping on, as always. Such a fun room. Love hearing from all of you. We'll be back. Actually, we definitely don't even have to contend with the schedule next week. As we said, the Knicks are for certain going to be off pretty much all next week until, I think, the weekend when the playoffs start. So we'll definitely be back here same time, same place next week, Thursday at 5:30. Gavin, do you have anything you want to plug before we get off real quick?
No. I mean, Brent kind of did it. Strickland and Locked On Knicks and enjoying good times. I think Brent advertised all those things for us.
Yeah, nothing better than that. So thank you all, everyone, for popping on. Looking forward to talking to you all next week, too. But this has been our Locked On Knicks locker room, and we'll talk to you all next week, guys. Peace out.